helping students in medicine not just survive, but thrive with a purpose. This is the CMDA Student Pulse Podcast with your host, Bill Reichert, National Director of CMDA's Campus Ministries.
Well, welcome to another episode of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. I'm Bill Reichert, and today we have a very special interview with Dr. Jeff Barrows, who's Senior Vice President of Bioethics here at CMDA. And we're going to be discussing the issues of life, advocacy for life, and the Dobbs decision, and what does it mean for students who are now going through their medical or dental school training. So without further ado, let's dive in with our interview with Dr. Jeff Barrows. Well, I'm glad that you're here, Dr. Jeff Barrows, on this episode of CMDA Student Pulse Podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Glad to be with you, Bill. Thanks for inviting me.
For those of you listening, let me give a quick bio, an introduction to Dr. Barrows. Dr. Jeff Barrows has a doctor of osteopathic medicine, as well as an MA in ethics, and serves as our Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy for CMDA. So I have the privilege of working with Dr. Barrows as part of our leadership team here at CMDA. Dr. Barrows is a OBGYN, author, educator, medical ethicist, and speaker. Jeff has dedicated 15 years of his career fighting human trafficking, and that's where I was first introduced to Jeff several years ago, back when I was in Atlanta. Fighting human trafficking has been a part and passion of Jeff's career, and he is especially addressing human trafficking as it intersects with healthcare. In 2008, Dr. Barrows founded Grace Haven, an organization assisting victims of domestic minor sex trafficking in Ohio. And in 2019, Jeff published a novel entitled Finding Freedom that realistically portrays child sex trafficking in the U.S. Jeff is married to Kathy for 44 years with three grown children and a granddaughter. All right, there's a lot there. You are very busy, have an active history as well, dealing with those who are marginalized, those who are in need of justice. And the issue we want to talk about in particular are the vulnerable, the young, those who are not yet born, especially as it relates to this recent Dobbs decision that was that took place at the Supreme Court last month in June. And I thought this is a great opportunity, as you have been front and center on this issue. You have been a voice of CMDA in the public square, addressing not only the Dobbs decision, but where we go from here and how do we engage as Christ followers faithfully for the vulnerable, for those who are in the womb, for mothers who are in crisis pregnancies. I thought it'd be a great opportunity for you to talk to our students and to those in training who are at the beginning stages of their healthcare training and how to think Christianly on this issue. And so I think maybe to start us, it would be important for us to understand what we're up against, kind of what the current situation is and what the Dobbs decision actually said and maybe what it didn't say.
Yeah, Bill, I agree. This is really important for the students to have a good understanding, especially of the legal perspective of it, because there is a tremendous amount of misinformation and even disinformation where they're just purposefully creating a lot of chaos around the decision. So I think the best way to really briefly give an overview of the Dobbs decision is a little bit of history behind it, because I know students are very busy. They're not really thinking all that much of what's going on in the outside world other than their studies, and that rightfully so. But in 2018, Mississippi passed a law banning abortion after 15 weeks. And immediately, because the judicial decision of Roe v. Wade was still in place, mm-hmm. There was a lawsuit filed by the only abortion clinic in Mississippi. It's Jackson Women's Health. And they stopped the law from being enforced. And of course, over the next several years, the law worked its way through the district court, the appeals court. And then about a year ago, it was accepted for review by the Supreme Court. And at that time, it became known as Dobbs v. Jackson. Dr. Thomas Dobbs is the highest ranking leader in the Department of Health in the state of Mississippi. That's how his name got on the case. And so it's important to understand that when the Supreme Court accepted the case, they agreed to answer one critical question, and that is it legal, constitutional for a state to ban abortions at 15 weeks like Mississippi did? And in their decision, which, as you said, was released last month, the Supreme Court decided by a vote of 6-3 that, yes, it is possible and constitutional, therefore legal, for a state to pass a ban at 15 weeks. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of confusion has come up because there was a second opinion that was released as part of Dobbs, and that is when the justices accept a decision like that or make a decision, they need to base it somehow in some legal principle. And if they could have found a legal principle within either the Roe case or another famous abortion case, Casey versus Planned Parenthood, they would have been able to leave those intact and make that decision. But five of the justices felt that no, both of those previous decisions, Roe v. Wade made in 1973 and the Casey decision made in 1992, were both badly decided, that were not based on solid constitutional grounds. And so by a vote of 5-4, they overturned both Roe v. Wade and Casey. Now, in that particular part of the opinion, Chief Justice Roberts did not agree, and that's why there is a different number of justices. So if by 6-3, the court said, yes, a state can pass a ban at 15 weeks, but by a vote of 5-4, the justices decided to overturn Roe v. Wade and Casey and therefore make abortion its legality, I should say, and leave that decision up to the states. So that's really where we are with abortion regulation here in the United States.
So just to clarify, because there is a lot of misinformation, abortion is not banned. It is pushed to the states, in other words.
That is absolutely correct. That's the first people are saying that it's now illegal in every state in the United States. No, that is completely incorrect. It just goes back to whatever law the state has in place. And so there are many states, including New York, Illinois, California, and several other Western states that have it as legal, and it's still legal there. But there are other states that had previously created what are called trigger laws, laws in place that if the Supreme Court should decide to overturn Roe, that then at that decision, abortion would become illegal in that particular state.
So in addition to that misconception, what are you seeing as some of the major misconceptions out there in the discussion over this Dobbs case and its consequences?
Well, I think the second really common misinformation is that a lot of people are talking about a, quote, constitutional right to abortion. And this is really the reason that this court overturned Roe v. Wade. There never was any clear constitutional right. If you read the Dobbs decision closely, you understand that the justices in both the Roe v. Wade decision and to some degree in the Casey decision based the right to abortion on a right to privacy that they felt was contained in the 14th Amendment. Now, it's interesting that the 14th Amendment, nor does anywhere in the Constitution contain the word abortion, or does it contain the word privacy, for that matter. In fact, the well-known clause in the 14th Amendment is that nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. And so in order to derive a right to privacy and therefore a right to abortion, the Roe v. Wade court really had to do a lot of interpreting. And this is very different than the constitutional right to freedom of speech, for instance, which is clearly worded in the First Amendment, or as we're hearing a lot now, the right to carry a gun. That's clearly worded in the Second Amendment. But there is no wording. In fact, again, the word abortion doesn't appear in the Constitution, and the word privacy doesn't appear. So it's not really a constitutional right at any level. And so the other one is that now we're hearing that it's going to be very difficult for pregnant women to get care for things like miscarriage, mm-hmm. ectopic pregnancies, even infertility in states that outlaw abortion. This, in my opinion, again, as an OBGYN, this is completely unfounded. For years, I practiced here in Ohio in a hospital that did not allow abortion, and never did I have any problem caring for women that were suffering with a miscarriage or had life-threatening ectopic pregnancy. In fact, it never even came up. Mm. And so I think that's just a wild accusation to really get people upset about this. It's an unfortunate form of fear-mongering that's out there. So that is another misinformation out there that's just without any merit.
Well, thank you for adding some clarity to what is out there. There's a lot of confusing information and misinformation. Let's switch gears and talk about those who are advocating for life. Now, what does it mean for them? What does it mean for us who advocate for life, who are definitely pleased and excited that this is the result of the Dobbs decision and that Roe versus Wade is a decision no longer in play. Yet we know that there's still, as you suggest, there's still work now being pushed down into the state level. So what are some of, do you think, are the next steps or what's the roadmap moving forward as we continue to press in? Because obviously the work here is not done.
Bill, that's exactly right. In fact, there are people that are on the pro-life side that are saying that really our work is just beginning. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that's true. And as you alluded to, really, I think it's at two levels. The first is legislative advocacy. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be mainly, as you said, at the state level, because that's what the Supreme Court did. It said, all right, we're going to turn it back to the people and their elected representatives. And it does also refer to Congress, and there has been some effort by Congress to pass what is very deceptively named as the Women's Health Protection Act. That is a horrible piece of legislation that, if it was ever passed, would put into federal statute and make abortion legal throughout the entirety of pregnancy. There's absolutely no limitation on abortion within that act. It's dream legislation for those on the pro-abortion side. And by the way, if it were to ever be passed, it would make us one of the most radical abortion countries in the world. Wow. Fortunately, the Senate requires 60 votes to get past the filibuster. Mm-hmm. Though the bill has passed twice in the House of Representatives, it cannot get through the Senate at this point in time. So that's frankly what's saving us. So on the federal side, it's kind of roadblocked, but the states are taking up legislation very actively. And so CMDA is working at our state level with our members that are very interested and passionate about advocacy, who are willing to testify. They're willing to write letters to the legislators, mm-hmm. as well as really coming to them directly and saying, we want pro-life legislation, or we want to battle this pro-abortion legislation, depending on the state. And the one state right now that's actually in our sights is the state of Indiana. They will be having a special session that will consider abortion legislation. That's all they'll be working on, and we're hoping that they will pass very pro-life legislation. So the main area where we're going to need to be working again is at the advocacy level legislatively. But the second is we need to become more involved at the direct care level. And that's really, as you alluded to, the care of women that are in needy pregnancies, maybe unplanned pregnancies, or maybe they're all alone, their partner has left them. Whatever the situation might be, we need to grow the network of pregnancy support centers that are out there and support them in whatever way we can. And it's really fortunate we can do that in healthcare in very, very real ways, very tangible ways, but also providing support to them, as well as even considering if we have the ability of starting a center if we're in a city that doesn't have one. So that would be the second area to really have people get engaged.
Wow, that's very helpful. And I appreciate, again, you bringing a lot of clarity to this issue. Now, what I want to do, though, is kind of begin to press it now down into the lives of our listeners who mostly healthcare students. This is a podcast geared for healthcare students. So going to where they're at, especially in these early stages of their training, how does this apply to them? What are some of the unique challenges that you're aware they're facing as students or as they're starting to go into their residency or preparing for that, especially OBGYN future residents, as well as what are some of the opportunities you see healthcare students being able to have that are unique to them in their situation at this point in their training career?
Well, that's an excellent question, Bill. And I guess I need to first recognize and be honest and transparent that, mm-hmm. that pro-life students are in the minority. They mm-hmm. have a difficult situation. And frankly, I'm thankful that I am beyond that point. Mm-hmm. But even recognizing that they're in the minority, it does create an opportunity for them. But it's much easier for people that are kind of not really knowledgeable about when life begins and those types of things. It's so much easier to stand up for the rights of the person who you can hear from and you can see. And that's, of course, the pregnant woman. And that's so it's a lot easier for the students to kind of get on board and say, why shouldn't we allow this woman to have an abortion? What's wrong with that? She's in a terrible situation, on and on. But what's more difficult is to stand up for the rights of the, as you mentioned earlier, the hidden human being. That's mm-hmm. the in utero, the unborn human being, the child. And they're not able to speak up for themselves. They're not able to speak for their rights. And they're invisible, except for, later in pregnancy, the pregnant woman themselves will show that. But that makes it so much more difficult for us to say and stand up for that unborn child, but it is possible. And I think that the best way to do it is to talk about it at the level of worldview. Hmm. By that, I mean that we see ourselves as Christians as being created. And we didn't get here by accident. We got here by a very different way. And this is obviously going to be very different than the worldview of many of the medical school peers who believe that there is no God, who believe that maybe in evolution, that creates a whole different way of looking at the world. And I would encourage the students to think about mainly keeping the conversation at that level. And it's a way of them witnessing then. It's an opportunity where they just say, I look at the world very differently. I look at the world that I am created. Mm-hmm. And not only that I believe the Bible tells us that I'm created in the image of God. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I am accountable to God because of that. And I really don't have any choice. I have to look at that unborn baby as also created in the image of mm-hmm. God and of inestimable value. And that's why I'm advocating against abortion. Mm. And so, it's an opportunity to be a witness. I think it's hopefully an opportunity to cause the student that they're talking to think about it a little bit more, because maybe they were raised in a Christian home, but they hadn't really thought it through. Mm. And I think that is an issue that so many that are engaged in the discussion on abortion haven't really spent a lot of time thinking about it. And I think in all honesty, it's not that we're going to be able to convince all the students that are pro-choice or pro-abortion just by one interaction. But taking the discussion to that level mm-hmm. will often throw them off because they're not thinking about it in that way. Mm-hmm. And another question really is that they can ask is, how is it right to argue for our autonomy mm-hmm. as a human being to the God who created us? Mm-hmm. So, if you imagine that you're arguing for the autonomy of that pregnant woman, but what does God have to say about that autonomy, especially as compared to the unborn baby? Mm. But, with that, students are uniquely positioned. They can address the issues of personhood a little bit better in terms of when life begins as well. And if you want to talk about that, we can go into that a little bit more.
Sure, I'd love to come back to that. Let me talk about that as I frame up this kind of this idea that you touched on is being better informed. So CMDA has some great resources, I think, that help build a greater sense of confidence that will give, I think, a student more confidence in terms of how they communicate on these issues. So we've got position statements, and I'd love for you to speak into that a little bit, as well as I know that the Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, even has some information for healthcare professionals as it relates to what are our, right, the rights of conscience, and what's afforded to us legally as to, on these issues and other types of healthcare related issues that we may have a conscientious objection, of course, as a Christian, to engage in certain procedures and such. And so would you touch on that a little bit in terms of what are some of those resources available for students to begin to, again, to equip themselves, to better understand the issues before them? And then, of course, do get into some of even the apologetics as it relates to when does life begin and how do we know that and how can we better communicate that?
It's fortunate, and I think good timing, that CMDA about a year ago just recently approved an updated statement, a mm-hmm. position statement on abortion, and any of the students can get to that by going to our main website, and they can download that as a PDF file. Mm-hmm. And that is a fairly extensive statement. I mean, it goes through the biblical, the biological, the ethical, and community aspects of abortion. And there's a lot there. It's several pages long. And that's a great place to start. We also have what's called Standards for Life that mm-hmm. they can get to. And there's a Standards for Life on abortion. Mm-hmm. And they just go to cmda.org/standards and the number for life. And then the third relatively new resource that we've put together is called Bridging the Gap. Mm-hmm. And this was originally designed for small discussion groups in churches as well as in Bible studies. But one of the parts of the curriculum is beginning of life, and there's a lot of information there, especially if students want to gather together and maybe as a group look at scripture and have a Bible study and talk about the whole issue. That would be one that they can get. And that, again, is called Bridging the Gap, and they can get that at cmda.org/bridgingthegap. But when you get into the legal side, and I'm glad you brought that up, there are some protections, especially for right of conscience, or I'd like to really use the terminology conscience freedoms. Mm-hmm. The students should never be forced into any position where they are forced to engage or be trained in abortion. There's a couple of amendments that have been passed years ago federally. They're known as the Church Amendments, and there's also what's called the Coates-Snow Amendment. That one actually is more important because it deals with those that are in their medical training. But there's one key thing to recognize about these, and that is these are prohibitions put into law by Congress, but they have to be enforced by HHS. Mm. And so when you have an administration that is in power that is very pro-abortion, like the current administration, then they're going to ignore these amendments. And so it puts more onus on the student. But I would say that if any student is ever forced or disciplined because they refuse to engage in abortion training or participate in any way in abortion training, there is the door open then for legal action on the basis of these amendments. And I think it's important for them to understand that. And so, first of all, we would very much at the Home Office want to know about that, would love to hear their stories. These stories are very important to us as we advocate at the federal and at the state level. And then we'd also want to know so that we can connect them with mm-hmm. either ADF or some of these other legal organizations that are so wonderful at working alongside of us.
I think that's an excellent word, especially as students are facing some of those challenges, to know that they're not alone. And for us to have an opportunity as a national organization to come alongside and connect them with resources. Of course, some students may be in communities where there's other leadership, a local leadership that can come alongside and help as well. I think, again, it goes to the point that as a student, there is a fellowship, a community of Christ-minded individuals who love Christ, who want to serve Him, who are a part of this work and ministry of CMDA. And that's, maybe I'm now going to make a selling point to, why become a member of CMDA? It's because of issues like this in particular, for a lot of reasons beyond what I'm just discussing. But this issue alone is worth becoming part of a community that comes alongside, supports, encourages, especially when someone feels like maybe their back's against the wall or they're being pressed into doing something that is a violation of their conscience. So I just think being a part of CMDA is a tremendous community, especially in times like this.
Yeah, it's so important. And we can't fight this alone. We need to be with others. We need to get advice on various aspects, not just legal, but what to do when you've got, we got somebody that's in your preceptorship that's forcing you or pressuring you to get trained on abortion when you really don't want to. And you can't face that alone. It's so helpful to have the community around you.
Well, and let's just say that this community even stretches beyond CMDA. I mean, the Alliance of Hippocratic Medicine. Maybe even explain that. I mean, that is a tremendous picture of how we're coming together, you know, with other like-minded organizations to even address this and many other issues.
Yeah, that's a relatively new engagement that we've been working on at the home office for a little over a year now. And it's in recognition that there are so many large medical societies that are so bent, not just on abortion, but other practices like assisted suicide and various transgender procedures, that we realize that we at CMDA, even though we've got tens of thousands that are members, we need to have other organizations draw alongside. So we're putting together the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine with other groups like the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, the Catholic Medical Association, and others. It's really been a terrific boost to us because we've been able to engage not only at the federal level with more than one organization, but also to really focus on advocating for the students and the residents. For instance, an acronym probably well known to many of the students is the ACGME, which is the American College of Graduate Medical Education. That's the body that is over all of the residency programs in all the specialties around the country. And unfortunately, the ACGME is working to force all of the residents that have any type of interaction with women to undergo abortion training. And it's in what they call an opt-out. Hmm. In other words, that it would be assumed that the resident would be engaged in that training unless they go through a process to opt out. And what we'd like to see is rather an opt-in, where if a particular resident in, let's say, OBGYN or family medicine wants to get trained in abortion, they would opt into the program and maybe go out to an outside hospital. But the ACGME really is, again, trying to put pressure on residents so that they are forced to go through a process to opt out. We're advocating through APLOG and others against that. And then just in the last few weeks, since the Dobbs decision was released, the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology, which is the certification board for all OBGYNs, is threatening to pull certification if they find that a member is giving out, quote, misinformation. And they don't define what misinformation is, but they do specifically reference at legislative hearings. So it appears that they are trying to threaten docs that want to get engaged in legislative advocacy, especially for life, and threaten them with removing their certification. So we're working to protect the docs in that, and we've sent a letter to them, letting ABOG know that if that in fact does happen, that we already have attorneys and we will be ready to file suit against that. So it's important that we work together, not just in community, but with other organizations. And it's fortunate for us that we have several like-minded that have come alongside us in this.
Wow. Well, this has been a great conversation. I know we're kind of coming to the end of our time, but let me say a couple of housekeeping issues. Many resources we've mentioned, and I'll make sure at the end of the podcast to mention where they can find them in our show notes, and we'll have links to the resources we've discussed. But as we kind of, again, bring this time to a close, Jeff, and, you know, I'm so grateful for the work you and your team are doing, how can students get engaged, or what would be their calls? What would you say to a student listening right now in terms of a call to action? What could they do next? What could be the next step as they advocate for life?
Well, again, that's a great question, Bill. And I would say first that they need to make sure that they're equipped themselves to winsomely argue for life by reading through our position statement that I mentioned, reading through Standards for Life. Another book that I just discovered, and Bill, you know this, but I am working on a curriculum mm-hmm. for students and residents to advocate not just against abortion, but mm-hmm. for other biblical values, and hope to have that out in the next 1 to 2 years. It's gonna be a while. But one of the books that I've recently discovered is by Sean McDowell. It's called A Rebel's Manifesto. Hmm. And he has a chapter in there that deals directly with abortion. So I think step one is to really equip themselves to winsomely argue for life. Step two would be to have them engage with us. I mean, I know that students think, well, I'm the lowest person on the totem pole. I can't go before a legislative committee and advocate. But I would say to you, you don't recognize the power that you have. You will be immediately seen by those legislators as the future of medicine in that state. That's powerful. And so even if they can't go in person, and by the way, we're very happy to help them and how they should testify and what the process looks like and help them put together their talking points, whatever help they need, or they could give written testimony as well. And if they're interested, they can simply write us at advocacy@cmda.org. In addition, I would say, as I mentioned earlier, direct care. Even as a student, they can volunteer to help at pregnancy resource centers, mm-hmm. Especially during their summer break. And then finally, if you've got a story and you've been pressured in school or in residency, and you want to share it with us, it would be very, very helpful for us to have stories. We certainly won't use names or locations. We'll keep you from being identified. But those stories are critical as we work to advocate at the state level.
Those are good calls to action, good next steps. Thank you, Jeff, for, again, taking the time to, again, just lay out what we're up against, where we're at currently, and where we're to press in yet still further still into the future and advocating for life and protecting the unborn. And those of you listening, do keep Jeff and his advocacy team and all those involved with him, volunteers as such, in prayer. It is I only know from where I sit, given that I'm hearing the stories and the challenges. It's a very challenging, rewarding yet still, but challenging endeavor, because it is now we're not just dealing with one federal issue, but we're dealing with 50 now states that are going to be legislating on this issue, and that all of a sudden just multiplies it exponentially in terms of the amount of effort and work. And again, there's a lot there, and I just encourage all of you listening to pray for Jeff, his team here at CMDA.
Yeah, thank you, Bill, for that. Appreciate that. Appreciate any prayers and appreciate this time with you.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, every time you hear that noise, you know that these are some things that you need to know. I'm going to make this easy for you. I'm going to ask you to simply go to our CMDA Student Life app. And if you haven't already downloaded, simply go to the iPhone App Store or the Google Play Store. Get it on your phone, set up a profile. And it's on the CMDA Student Life app that we have a whole host of resources, things that are going to help you start off this semester for yourself as well as your CMDA student chapter. First of all, if you haven't done so already, you can join CMDA. That you can do that right on the app. And you can be a part of this ministry of movement of CMDA nationally. Also, we have curriculum opportunities, studies, small groups, large group studies that are there, right there on the app, exclusive on the app, and that you can download. They're video-driven studies as well as just some PDFs that you can download and you can work through, again, as a large or small group. So that's all on the app. And at the very top of the app, let me even draw your attention to Faith Prescriptions, which is our new video curriculum series that helps you integrate faith into practice. And we selected 6 studies that we think are very relevant and applicable to you as a student, and we've made them free and easily accessible there on the app. So again, check out the Student Life app, CMDA Student Life app, download it onto your phone. It has all the resources you'll need to be a part of CMDA and to have a successful year. Now, as always, if you want to check out our Student Pulse podcast show notes, they're at cmdastudentlife.com life.org/pulsepodcast. We mentioned a bunch of links on this conversation with Dr. Jeff Barrows, and so it's going to be there that you can get some of the links and information that we mentioned on the podcast. And as always, we share a lot of relevant and up-to-date information on our social media sites. So if you haven't done so already, like us, follow us. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Well, I'm looking forward to our next conversation together on the next episode of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. Hope to see you there.
CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on Student Pulse Podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on Student Pulse Podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.